My name is Don Blakeman, and I'm a geophysicist at the National Earthquake Information Center.
Checking out the news last night, and I saw that Midland, Texas, in the area, got an earthquake last night, so we thought we'd go to the National Earthquake Information Center, go to the source to find out what exactly happened last night near Midland, Texas. Mr. Don Blakeman, how are you doing today?
Doing fine. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you for joining the program,
sure.
Depending on how lazy you want to be on the holidays. But let's talk a little bit about this earthquake that happened. You mentioned these are becoming a little bit more frequent too, huh?
Well, yes, in general, in the West Texas area, there have been a lot more small quakes. This one may or may not have been a natural quake. When we look at our waveforms, which is a record of how the ground moves when one of these things occurs, we can't tell, just looking at those, whether or not these are human-caused, what we call induced quakes, or whether or not they're natural quakes. It simply doesn't show in the record. It requires more study, more closely defined instruments around the event and so forth in order to determine whether or not it was, fracking fluid reinjection-induced quake, or whether or not it's natural. But the answer is yes, we've had a lot more of these little quakes, and most of them much smaller than this out in West Texas.
Obviously, being in West Texas, the fracking and the earthquakes come right to mind right away. You mentioned that.
Sure.
Are there any other factors that, you know, play into that at all? We were talking a little bit before the interview, you know, it's almost like Clue, you know, Professor Plum in the conservatory with the candlestick, because there's so much obvious finger pointing going on. But are there anything else that, you know, the amount of trucks on the road with the, you know, the whatever kind of geology is there with the plates? I don't know. I'm just thinking of all these different things. It's a complex planet. So, I mean,
the basic simplified way of thinking of this is, it's not the fracking that causes earthquakes. Fracking does occasionally cause what we call microquakes, very, very tiny, insignificant quakes. It's actually the reinjection of the waste fluid from fracking in disposal wells that has induced quakes in many areas. We've seen this in West Texas. We've seen it in Oklahoma, places in Arkansas. The original injection well quakes that we first saw were back in the 60s. Some around Denver, some out in western Colorado near Paradox Basin. So basically, this is not a new phenomenon, but the fact that fracking has become a very much more prevalent practice in the oil industry is why we're seeing these injection well-induced quakes.
What was the magnitude of the quake?
Magnitude is 4.5. In the old days, we would have just called this a minor quake. It's one that was obviously felt by a lot of people, but would not cause any damage.
I noticed when I went to the page, there was several earthquakes in Texas last night, some a little bit more on the western side than the Big Spring Midland area where this 4.5 one took place. I specifically remember an interview I did up in the Bakken a number of years ago on lightning strikes. And I was just shocked at how many lightning strikes happen on a regular basis, like hundreds every night that I wasn't even aware of. And when I took a look at your earthquake map, I got thinking the same thing. How frequent are these minor earthquakes? Because you mentioned this 4.5 would be considered a minor earthquake, but because of the location and the unusual nature just of, you know, earthquakes in that Texas area, obviously it stands out. But how frequent are some of these minor earthquakes across Texas, Oklahoma, Colorado, you know, Kansas, anywhere?
Well, they're actually quite frequent. I don't have the exact number, but we have, I would say, just guessing, maybe 10, 15, 20 of these minor earthquakes in West Texas every day. Now, we're talking about quakes in the range from, say, magnitude 2 to 3, 3.5. So they're typically smaller than this, and that's another reason why this may or may not be a natural earthquake, just based on the size. But we see these all the time, every day. And in terms of, and most of these, I think, in this area, and further west in West Texas are probably induced quakes, man-made quakes. But natural quakes are very prevalent, too. There are probably at least a million earthquakes every year somewhere in the world. And we're able to locate, oh, maybe 100,000 of those if we wanted. We typically don't publish that many because most of them are quite small. But earthquakes are very common, just like lightning strikes, like you mentioned.
Is there a certain magnitude number that, I guess, triggers an alarm? You mentioned 4.5 was considered a minor quake, but that's getting close to 50%. So you're getting close to, you know, the 50-yard line. So I'd imagine...
Well, it doesn't really work that way.
Okay, that's why I got you on to ask the question. Because some of the other things could be just location, too. I mean, you start getting close to a city and a little tremble is going to alert the national media, whereas you get a, you know, 0.8 up in Alaska, nobody cares.
Yes. It turns out that most all earthquakes occur where people don't live, which is very fortunate. And that's kind of similar to the weather, where most storms are not where people live. But certainly when quakes occur close to populated areas, then it becomes much more of a concern, without a doubt. But the magnitude scale it's open-ended. There's no top magnitude to it, but it is logarithmic. And what that means is for every step up in the scale, like magnitude 4 to magnitude 5, that's 10 times as much ground movement. So if you went from a 4 to a 5 to a 6, that's 100 times as much ground movement. So these little quakes are, you know, fairly insignificant. People might be a little disturbed if they feel them, but it's nothing like when you get into magnitude 6, 7, 8 range, where we can have really a lot of destruction.
Yeah, the San Francisco one, of course, comes to mind, and I think it was the 1989, 1990s World Series.
Which, Prieta.
Yeah, well, people caught the devastation on camera, you know, outside of a movie set.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was a big deal in a day and age when nobody had cell phones. And so that was kind of, you know, nuclear holocaust movie from the 80s? The Day After. That's the one that educated all of us on the way that nuclear holocausts work, in the same way that World Series kind of educated a lot of people on just the way that we respond to earthquakes and some of the natural disasters.
It did, you know, it makes it more apparent. We're all become aware of it, but you have to remember movies are not a great source of scientific information.
Not at all. No, not at all. In fact, I remember that was one of my favorite interviews of Michael Crichton, the author. He would always say, remember, Hollywood is movies. It's not science. So stop trying to include me in there. You know, he'd get so mad about that. But I did want to just talk a little bit about the natural versus man-made. Now, you've mentioned the man-made, or at least alluded to some sort of terminology of man-made earthquakes versus natural earthquakes. Could you just elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. Basically, what an earthquake, a natural earthquake, is just the release of energy that's built up in the rocks. The tectonic plates of the Earth are moving all the time, and even in areas like West Texas that aren't on a tectonic plate boundary, they still suffer stress in the crust of the Earth because those plates are constantly trying to move. And when the stress builds up enough, the rocks break and the plates, that little tiny section of plate moves just a little bit. Well, that release of energy when those rocks break, that's the earthquake. And they travel out in waves, sort of like if you throw a rock out in a pond, the waves move out from where the rock hit the water. So that's the basic idea of this. And that stress can be is different in different places. So if fracking fluid is reinjected into disposal wells, sometimes that can change the pressure and stress regime, and even some occasionally lubricate a fault. It allows these little earthquakes to happen. It causes pressure in the rocks, and it allows pressure that's already built up to release. That's what happens with induced quakes.
So really what we're talking about is lubrication and pressure.
Mostly,
okay.
Yes.
So that would be kind of the driving factor of a man-made earthquake versus a natural earthquake.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. I do like to ask the fear questions nowadays. I never even would get into questions like this, but I almost feel like today's day and age, I have to ask these questions because it's getting we're in a world where the media seems to compete who can yell fire the loudest in a crowded theater.
Of course.
It used
of
to be
course.
Where you, that was like illegal. At least there was some ethics behind it. Now it's a competition. Any any fear of California opening up or Texas opening up and people falling in, or is that
that really never happened. Oh. That's something again for the movies.
Okay. I just gotta make sure.
even though some earthquakes and most don't, but some earthquakes have what we call a surface expression. So after the earthquake you can walk over to where the quake occurred and you can see the ground has moved differentially in different directions. But not all quakes have that surface expression. They're deep down in the ground and you don't see anything at the surface. But even with large earthquakes that have surface expression and you'll have landslides and you'll have slips along the fault that are visible and so forth, the ground doesn't open up and swallow people and buildings.
No, you got more of a fear of a sinkhole than you do of earthquakes, huh?
Well, not so much sinkholes. It's not even that. It's the shaking. And even that, earthquakes, shaking doesn't kill people. It's because it shakes buildings and stuff falls on them. That's the real danger.
That's probably why the California one stood out so much, because of the land use out there and everything. Because like you mentioned, they generally don't happen where there's people living. And
that's just because the world's a big place and we don't live in all the places on the land even. And many, many earthquakes happen in the ocean crest. Like the Mid-Atlantic Ridge.
That is true, yeah. I'd looked at your map, and what got me thinking about the big natural disaster ones is I did notice there were several earthquakes on the fault lines, and I thought, well, that's interesting, because here we got three earthquakes up in the Northern California, Seattle area on the fault lines, and then the rest of them across the United States looked like it didn't even hit one of those fault lines. So,
have to remember, some faults are known, especially the ones that are very active. The San Andreas is a classic example. Some faults are known, but others, like I say, are deeper in the crust. They don't have any surface expression, and they're not even known. So, basically, it's kind of a semantic thing. If an earthquake occurs, that means that there is a fault there. Now, it doesn't mean it's very big. It can be a local situation, or perhaps regional. But sort of by definition, if an earthquake happens, that means the rocks have broken and released that energy. That is essentially what a fault is.
How closely do you guys monitor the oil and gas industry, if I may ask? Because you mentioned that this, right out of the gate, this appeared to be more of a natural than and it had to do with some seismic activity or something?
I don't want to say that. I don't know if it's natural or induced. Like I said, I can't tell just by looking at what I see on my computer.
No, you said warrants further investigation, I think, is there was enough keys or triggers or something along those lines. Yeah, so what are some of those things that you look for?
It's a little bit far northeast for where most of these induced quakes have been. I'm sorry, what was your question?
Well, I was just wondering if there was certain, if you follow the oil and gas industry or energy industry or mining or just anything any more closely.
I wouldn't say that we follow them. Just like kind of like these quakes in West Texas, we have minor ones every day. There are quakes that are induced like this. There are natural ones. There are the mining industry. We record, because a blast at an open pit mine, for instance, puts energy into the ground. Our instruments see that. They show up as events. We know where those are. Those look different. We can generally tell a blast versus a natural earthquake. Those happen all the time. But as far as following the industry and like keeping tabs on them, we don't do that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. We see these events and we discriminate them best we can versus natural earthquakes. But we're not in contact with the oil industry, anything like that.
No, and I should too mention there. I was asking more from a scientific point of view. You start mentioning, different pressures with water versus rock. That's a real thing. That's legitimate science there. You start talking about some of these different pressures and lubrications. That is real science there that can really affect the geology, and you know, that's not discriminatory, folks. That's just flat old science.
We actually have, the USGS actually has a lot of researchers that are studying these situations and others, many different things about earthquakes. Those researchers, you know, when they find out new stuff, we, you know, it's all public, we release all that information. But as far as what I do looking at these quakes, it's simply earthquake location.
I think it's going to be interesting when the big data wave comes into this whole, you know, this whole natural disaster versus regular weather patterns. I used to do a little bit of climate activity talk, and I would, you know, the planet is a very chaotic place. It's a very busy place. You know, you've got hundreds of hurricanes every month or something like that, and you've got...
Well, that might be a bit of an exaggeration.
Yeah, that might be, but it was something like, there's a hurricane like every day or something like that, and a tornado and lightning strikes. And when you take a look at the sheer numbers of earthquakes, tornadoes, and these different things, it's amazing how often they are, really, because it is a big planet out there, and it's, you know, and the planet goes through changes. It just does, so...
Well, it's very active, and one thing I think that people don't understand well is that even though earthquakes are a very short-term, very short-lived phenomenon, like even the biggest earthquakes only last like 4 minutes, the whole process, the tectonic plate movement that creates this has been going on for billions of years and it'll go on for billions more. So there's both a short-term effect, which you know can be devastating for people, but this is a normal long-term process for the Earth.
Well, I appreciate you giving us some information today. Held you on a little bit longer than I thought, but I kind of like to nerd out about this stuff every now and then because it's fascinating. Like you said, the planet is a big planet, and there's all kinds of activities happening, and you know, it's wild out there. So,
it's interesting.
Yeah, do you have a website that you direct people to, a general website for, you know, the government website? Is there anything like that?
Well, there are general sites, just usgs.gov, I think. But if they're specifically interested in earthquakes, I generally start at earthquake.usgs.gov. So earthquake.usgs.gov.
All righty. Well, I appreciate it. Don Blakeman, National Earthquake Info Center. Appreciate your time today.
Sure. You're welcome.